This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And we are coming to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, National Mortgage Lender, Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. It's the Ken Carmen Show on CBS Sports Radio, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Usually I would go on some long diatribe that you don't even care about, but right now we bring you news that you might care about. A lot of you might care about, because we may very well have possibly the first canning of 2018. We go live to Cleveland, and we welcome in on the hotline Dangerous Daryl Ryder, 92.3 The Fan. He's their Browns beat reporter. I know him well. He joins us right now tonight. Find him on Twitter, at RyderWrongFAN. Daryl, good evening.
Good evening, Ken. Thanks for having me.
What do you know?
Well, what I can tell you is that the owner of the team, Jimmy Haslam, and general manager, Don Dorsey, they're not really thrilled right now that the Cleveland Browns not only lost this afternoon in Tampa Bay in overtime, squandering yet another opportunity to win, but that the fact that the team sits at 2-4-1 at this juncture of the season. John Dorsey believes that he put together a team that was ready to win and win immediately, and the Browns have not done that. And then obviously Hugh Jackson's post-game comments concerning his expertise when it comes to offense, being ready to dip in to Todd Haley's territory, I'm sure that also didn't resonate well within the organization.
That was very strong. Was that a tipping point?
Well, you know, I've seen this before multiple times, and this kind of feels like the beginning of the end. While it may not be immediate, as in tonight or tomorrow, it's just like it's going to come at some point. It's almost inevitable. The only thing I think that can save Hugh Jackson point.
Daryl, you're breaking up. We're losing Daryl Ryder.
The only thing that could save Hugh Jackson's job at this point is whether – if the Browns start rolling off some wins here, and they haven't won back-to-back games in years. Their next opponent is the Pittsburgh Steelers. They haven't won at Heinz Field since 2003. So I think that we are getting close to the end of the Hugh Jackson era in Cleveland at this point.
Well, how soon could we? Because if they're meeting tonight, are they meeting tonight or are they meeting in the morning?
Well, I don't know that they're what I was told is that this all happened in Tampa, that the displeasure was expressed in Tampa before they even got on the plane. So, you know, I've seen this movie enough to know that this is, you know, if the rumblings are beginning already, it doesn't necessarily mean the action is immediate, but you're already having frustrations being expressed internally about the outcome of these games and the job being done on the sideline. That tells me that, Hugh Jackson should not be feeling too good about job security beyond this season.
Daryl Ryder joining us on the show, 92.3 The Fan, Browns beat reporter. Find him on Twitter, at RyderWrongFAN. We're having some phone issues with him. Hopefully we can find a better signal as we roll on. Daryl, when they talk about the future of Hugh Jackson, you're saying, you know, over the next couple of weeks, you know, when you're talking about maybe putting him out there, and because a lot of people look towards week 10, that's the Browns bye week there. If they as an organization are speaking at all about the future of Hugh Jackson, my question is, what's the point? You've already been through this before. Mm-hmm. You kept him through an off season and coming off 0-16. It would have made sense to bring in John Dorsey and then let him bring in his own head coach. So if you're going to wait any longer, and now this is being brought up, then what would indeed be the point of letting that play out any longer, Daryl?
Well, it's to give this thing a fair opportunity to get back on track. You know, they've already changed out the quarterback this year. They traded their starting running back on Friday to Jacksonville, and Nick Chubb really showed this afternoon that that was not necessarily the worst of personnel decisions. He ran very well against the Buccaneers. The problem that the Cleveland Browns have is that they have this reputation of having the itchy trigger finger when it comes to coaches and GMs. And I know that that's something that the Haslam family wants to get away from. They are dying to find some stability. And it's part of the reason why they kept Hugh Jackson after the 1-31 the previous two seasons, was to give him an honest opportunity with a legitimate NFL roster, which John Dorsey feels that he has provided him, to win and show that he can win. But when, I go to last year with throwing Sashi Brown under the bus, today throwing Todd Haley under the bus, when your leader of your organization is out in front constantly throwing people under the bus, at some point you have to question that person's leadership style.
We'll get those comments coming up here momentarily for everybody to hear. Hugh Jackson had some words saying that he was going to involve himself in the play calling in the future. If that were to be the way, then, Daryl, say they don't make a move. Say Hugh Jackson remains the head coach, Todd Haley remains the offensive coordinator. How's that supposed to work? Because you brought in Todd Haley to take over the play calling.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, Ken. That is the whole reason you brought in Todd Haley, was to take that off Hugh Jackson's plate so he could focus on game management. And when you get into game management, you know, certainly you can understand the Browns going for it today on 4th and 1/2 inch to go, but you can't understand them going for it at the end of the first half on a 4th and 2 and not just taking your 3 points and going into the locker room. So Hugh Jackson says he wants to be aggressive, and I wrote this after the game. It seems like every time Hugh Jackson wants to be aggressive, he always picks the wrong time to be aggressive. So I don't want to say that this was foreshadowed during Hard Knocks. I think it was foreshadowed the day that Todd Haley was hired. You have Haley, who is a type A personality and very well accomplished himself, and you have Hugh Jackson, who also likes to have control over the situation. How those two personalities were going to be able to work together was something to watch, and I don't want to say that it's become combustible, but you have to take Hugh Jackson at his word after the game if he's talking about taking play calling duties away from Todd Haley at this point. And that to me is a very interesting development and something that rings alarm bells and says that, hey, all is not well with what's going on behind the scenes with the coaching staff.
Daryl Ryder joining us, Browns beat reporter, 92.3 The Fan, 92.3thefan.com. And Cleveland, will take your calls after we get done talking to Daryl, 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Where does Baker Mayfield fit in all this in the terms of his maturation and what they're thinking? Because when you remove a head coach, I'm to think there's an interim head coach in there that gets involved. Then you're probably looking at a different candidate for the 2018-19 offseason. So how are we handling this in the terms of Baker Mayfield and how the rest of his season goes?
Well, I don't think that there'll be much effect on Baker, because I don't think that the offense would change if the Browns were to make an in-season change here. I think that they can move forward with the same offense, just I think that they have to operate differently. You know, they don't have that prototypical number one wide receiver. They had him in Josh Gordon. They just got tired of dealing with his antics, and that's why he's in New England catching passes for Tom Brady now. Jarvis Landry caught 10 of 15 targets today, had a very good day, tying touchdown late in the fourth quarter with about 2.5 minutes to play. He's had his ups and downs with Baker here in the early stages. You got a rookie supporting cast around him, Damian Ratley, Antonio Callaway, of course, Breshad Perriman, who was brought in within the last 2 weeks here to try and shore up what has become a depleted receiving core. Rashard Higgins is going to come back at some point, so hopefully that'll be a benefit. But I don't think that – I'm sure it's a consideration, but I don't think that, you know, Baker Mayfield and what effects negatively this could have on him is going to be in the discussion, because, quite frankly, I don't know necessarily that it will have a negative effect on him.
Is it assumed that if there were a move to be made, that Todd Haley would be the interim head coach for the remainder of the year?
Well, I never like to assume anything. These are the Browns, and they, you know, always surprise us. But I would assume that that would be the logical choice to make. Haley has head coaching experience. You know, he can, Ken Zampezi's a former offensive coordinator. He's the quarterback's coach currently on this particular staff. He could easily be elevated to handle those duties. Haley could probably still call plays on game day. So I'm not concerned about the mechanics going forward. Again, that's assuming that the Browns decide to make a change. They haven't made that decision yet from what I understand, but you know, the fact that the ownership and GM are starting to chirp and starting to express their displeasure with how things are going, that seems to indicate that the things might be in motion here at some point.
So if Todd Haley were to take over as interim head coach, he would still call plays?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, Ken Zampezi called plays with the Cincinnati Bengals. I think right now they have some flexibility there, with what they wanted to do. Again, if they decided to make a change, what helps the Browns in this situation, Ken, is you have experienced people that have the legitimate resume to step in and assume roles if, in fact, that's what you call upon them to do.
All right, Daryl, we'll check in with you momentarily or as the night goes on if we're to find out anything, and then, of course, over the next week. Daryl, we thank you very much for the time.
You got it, Ken.
Daryl Ryder joining us, Browns beat reporter, 92.3 The Fan, 92.3thefan.com. This is what happened after today's game. Ryan, you have the clip, right? This is what happened after today's game. The Browns lost in overtime 26-23. The stats have been thrown out there about Hugh Jackson. The stats have been thrown out about his overall record with the Cleveland Browns. And then there was a question about the play calling and the play calling duties, and if Hugh Jackson would step in for play calling or to put together a game plan. This is what he had to say.
I'm not going to continue to watch something that I know how to do. Keep being that way. That's just the truth. I mean, that's nothing against anybody in our building. I just think that's what I do, and I think I need to be a little bit more involved. Trust me when I say I'm not trying to create any issue here. But I think if the offense is not playing well, and we haven't over a period of time, being a head coach and an offensive guy who's done this, I think I have every right as a head coach to jump in here and see if I can help and assist and get this thing to where I think it needs to be, because we need to be better on offense. And if that's my specialty, then I need to be involved more, and I will be. I mean, I've been respectful. I mean, that's why you bring guys in and you make them the coordinator, you know. Again, there's some things we gotta fix fast to get this thing back to where it needs to be.
You know, there was a question when Carlos Hyde was traded on Friday about whether or not this was a move made in lockstep. They wanted to see more Nick Chubb. They got to see more Nick Chubb today down in Tampa Bay. Played pretty well for the carries that he got. That was one of those moves. What this is, though, is, and you claim that you see some things at Hard Knocks, and some of it is editing, some of it is cameras. This is what it is. And now before when you had regular run-of-the-mill garbage quarterbacking, when you had regular run-of-the-mill garbage football, this is one of the things that go against the Cleveland Browns over time. There can be infighting, there can be messes, there can be drama, and you just blow the whole thing up and you start all over again. Now you have something. Now you have something to work with. You had the number one overall pick the last couple of years. You bring in Myles Garrett, you bring in Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield seems to be able to move the football at a decent and up clip in the second half. The first half has been an absolute abysmal, an abomination. When mom and dad fight, it affects the children most. When you have a head coach and an offensive coordinator trying to get underneath each other's skin, press conference-wise, decision-making-wise, when you're making decisions on your roster, and they may very well be dependent on infighting between the coaching staff and their own theories and their own ideas of what a football team's to do. When you have parents who fight over money, over jealousy, over whatever stupidity they might have, the children are the one that suffer. For a Browns fan and for anybody who likes football, and especially for anybody who likes Baker Mayfield, that's the very first and foremost fear that you have. That these two not getting along with certain infighting and shots at each other in the media, that's the first thing you think of, how it affects Baker Mayfield. Can I say it's the overall end-all be-all? Absolutely not. You'll have other things that you have to deal with as a franchise quarterback, but on your maiden voyage for the Browns to do Browns things, that sticks against you. And that puts another thing that Baker Mayfield has to deal with, another thing that he has to bail that football team out of, a test that other football teams don't ask, a test that other rookies might not have to deal with. Sam Darnold might have to deal with it at the end of the year. We'll see what happens with the Jets. It looks like the Cardinals, unless they become a 1-15 out-and-out disaster, they might not have to deal with it on their own right. Josh Rosen won't have to deal with it. It looks like Sean McDermott and everybody up in Buffalo, for the most part, will be safe with Josh Allen, as of right now. But already, when you got guys taking shots at each other across the bow, it's as if the players want to get going, you can't get out of each other's way, and you're supposed to be the ones looking over them. In any other walk of life, if this was a real family, you'd be calling Children's Services if you were one of the neighbors. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. We'll get to some of the calls when we come back. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is the Ken Carmen Show.
855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227. Got a short amount of time to get some calls in. Jerry Palm going to join us at 10:35, 10:40 p.m. Eastern. Let me go right to the Great White North. Cam in Canada, speaking about Hugh Jackson and the Browns. Cam, you're next up on CBS Sports Radio.
How's it going, Cam? This is unbelievable. I didn't realize you were national in Canada. This is great.
Cam, it's wonderful to speak to you, friend. Go ahead.
Thanks, bud. Okay, so I just wanted to run down some numbers real quick, and then I was going to give you a quick 10 seconds, then I'll be it.
All right.
This is how long it'll take Hugh Jackson. I ran these numbers in mid-September. This is how long it would take Hugh Jackson to win 9 games. Not 9 games in a season, 9 games in total.
Okay.
306 games, 6,981 days, 20 drafts. The year would be 2039. LeBron James Jr. would be 36, and Jim Brown would be 102 years old. Okay.
Wait a minute. How do you know all that, Cam?
Figured it out. Calculator, man. Now, I want to say one more thing. This is an untenable org chart. This is an untenable organizational structure. When you give power to a general manager and power to a head coach that can both go into an office and speak directly to the owner without a buffer, which Dee Podesta is supposed to be, but we all know he isn't, it's an untenable situation. At the end of the day, this is about Jimmy Haslam keeping his hands in everything. And if he doesn't remove Jackson, this thing is going to blow up.
Well, there's been a thought and maybe a bit of a consensus. And, Cam, I don't know where else to go from it. I can't sit here and think you're crazy. I can't sit here and disagree with you. And I got, because I want to get to Adam in Buffalo, and I thank you very much for the call, Cam. Is that if they continue with Hugh Jackson, I always think, well, what's the worst that can happen? I don't know how much of an effect it has on the football team with the effect of you're losing football games. And if you're going to make a change there, you're thinking of this case. The Browns have played 4 games in overtime. You're thinking in the terms of a better coach could have got them over the hump. You're looking at a different complexion of the football team. The penalties have been an out-and-out disaster for the Browns, which you're going to think that's on coaching. So there's a lot there. But there's also the case of how soon do you start this process? Because if you start this process and it backfires and it puts Baker Mayfield in a tougher situation, it's tougher to find a better coach. Because you have to continuously prove to people that you're not the same old Browns. Baker can still do that. I don't think Todd Haley is a long-term answer. I don't think a lot of people would say that Todd Haley is a long-term answer. If you get out there now and Baker Mayfield plays well, throughout the rest of the season, you'll have guys who want to be the head coach of your football team. It makes me nervous because I think Sean McVay is the most dangerous man in the NFL, and the Browns are prone to making some silly decisions, and if they make a silly decision where they want to take another young guy, Sean McVay is not just found in another guy. He's a special circumstance. So if you take another young guy, you better hope that it's not just your version of Sean McVay, because your version of Sean McVay could be your version of Lane Kiffin, and more likely to be that way because they're set up in a very special scenario with the LA Rams. You got to help yourself. But if Baker Mayfield plays well for the rest of the year with an interim head coach, and under these circumstances, you start to turn a couple of these games, which they have a very tough schedule, you'll sell yourself to another coach. Because we're finding out, and you see this in college, and you're seeing this in the NFL, the sooner you're in that jump, you're starting to look at those candidates for 2019, the better it is for your football team. 855-212-4CBS. Adam in Buffalo. You're next up on CBS Sports Radio.
Well, Ken, first of all, it's an honor to be on with the best radio guy in the business. Hey, I'll be quick. As a long-suffering Browns fan, I've spent 2.5 years now watching Hugh Jackson, and what's becoming evident is that Hugh is the guy that stands in a room and throws stuff at the wall and hopes something sticks. And my problem with Hugh Jackson is there's absolutely no structure. There's no direction. There's no identity from his teams. And that's not just this year. That's a 3-year problem now. And I think you need all of those things to develop a young team and to develop a young quarterback. So understanding all your points about who are you going to find and trying to find the next great young coach. Unfortunately, even with all the turmoil we've had coaching-wise in the past, the problem is we have a current coach that is giving this franchise no direction. And to Cam's point, Cam from Canada, about power structure, when you have a GM and a coach that are going in different directions, we know that that's not going to work. So my problem is everything with Hugh is what's the next excuse? There's no solutions and there's no identity for his team. And that's a problem that's been here for 3 years, regardless of talent.
And Adam, and thank you very much for the call. There's been excuses before. But when you keep a coach from 0-16 and 1-31, and I have to sit here and preach, well, you know, you got to forget those years. They've switched over 60% of the roster. You have to forget about those years. I say that to you, and you are clicking me off. You're not going to forget that. Football fans don't forget that, and the owner doesn't forget that. The Browns are 2-4-1. They've played 4 overtime games. What have you won? You've won one of them. Throughout those overtime games, you're looking at this situation, could have been better had it not been for the penalties, had it not been for some of the missed opportunities, which you're going to have still with the youngest team in the NFL. And if it was a new head coach, if you'd have went out and you got Matt Nagy, if you'd have went out and got Frank Reich or anybody else, 2-4-1, okay. Hey, we'll get them next week. We'll figure it out. We'll do it. But that 1-31 sticks in your crawl. And if they're going to make a decision this early, then if you're going to make a decision this early, you should have made it back in January. 855-212-4CBS. More on this coming up in the next hour. Jerry Palm going to join us next. Buckeyes got rolled by Purdue. And so many people saying Urban Meyer's overrated. So many people saying Urban Meyer's bad. It's easy to be bad when you're compared to the greatest ever.
This is the Ken Carmen Show.
That number is 855-212-4CBS, and it's brought to you by Geico. There's great news. There's a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can save 15% or more on car insurance. Coming up at 11 p.m. Eastern, Jeff Goodman going to join us, basketball analyst for Stadium. We'll talk to a little bit about him about college basketball, the new rules for the G League that Adam Silver's coming out with, and if Rajon Rondo spits at you, is that a fight on sight? Right now we go to the hotline and we welcome in Jerry Palm, one of the very best and brightest when it comes to, well, basically all of sports, but especially college football. Find him on Twitter at JPPalmCBS. Jerry Palm, thanks for joining us tonight, my friend.
Hey, how's it going?
Is that Purdue drum really the biggest drum in the world?
So far as we know, it is. Yeah.
There's no other bigger drum?
There's no bigger drum.
All right, I'm going to have to find out because I don't know if they're telling the truth. Either way, Jeff Brown.
You just have to come down and stand next to it for yourself.
It's so loud. I don't know if I want to do so, and it's very imposing. And Purdue was imposing last night against Ohio State. Ohio State has been known to have a hiccup like this basically every single year now over the last couple of years. Did you expect it was going to get this out of hand and Dwayne Haskins throwing 73 times, Jerry?
He threw 73 times because they couldn't run, and then they got behind. You know, it's funny. He was, at one point early in the game, he was something like 19 for 25, but, you know, the passes weren't, you know, really downfield much. They could get anything they wanted in the flat. You know, they'd throw out to the flat, they get their guys in space one-on-one, and and they're getting 5 or 6 yards minimum just about every time. But when those six incompletions, he missed two wide open touchdowns, just missed through the ball, overthrew his guys. He threw nearly two interceptions among those incompletions. He was not sharp in general, but they had to throw so much because, you know, Purdue was scoring, especially in the second half. Felt like every time they touched the ball, and, you know, once you get down like that, you got to try and come back, and your running game's not working, and you're going to throw.
Jerry Palm joining us on the show. Follow him on Twitter at JPPalmCBS. There were so many things said. Now, Twitter can be a vacuum, I understand. There were so many things said about Urban Meyer being overrated, so on and so forth. I don't know, man, when you're comparing a guy to Nick Saban, how could you not be said you're overrated or a disappointment? Nick Saban has everything, has the world in his hands, and everybody else, you just really can't even make the same conversation with him.
Yeah, well, okay, if you're going to make that comparison, then, yeah, he is. You know, everybody is. But, you know, he's got a couple national championships. It's not like, you know, he's never been successful. Even these teams, you know, they're losing once a year, you know, maybe twice. It's, you know, they've got great talent. They've got great talent every year. They've got the best talent in the Big Ten, you know, just in terms of full depth of their roster every year. So they should win the league more often than not, and they do. But even Alabama doesn't win their league every year, and they've got the best talent in the country. So, you know, I don't think Urban Meyer's overrated, but, you know, he's got a team, I think, this year that isn't quite what some of his past teams have been. Haskins is, you know, a good quarterback, but still a young quarterback. Even though the talent, he's a very talented guy, and you can see that. But it's still somewhat raw talent, and that rawness showed up last night. I think their defensive line is fantastic. But the guys behind that line, that's where you can make plays against Ohio State, and that's where Purdue was making plays all night against Ohio State. When they could get enough protection for David Blau, or they could get the running game going, and once you got past that defensive line, you know, then the Purdue running backs, the Purdue receivers were having some success.
How great an opportunity is this for Jim Harbaugh now in Michigan, where you have Penn State coming up, which is not easy, I get that. Then you got Rutgers in Indiana, two cupcakes, and then you got Ohio State. If they can get past all of them, this is a playoff team from what it looks like.
Yeah, well, if, I think 12-1 Michigan, if that comes about, is a playoff team. And through, what are we now, 8 weeks into the season, I mean, I think you'd have to say that Michigan is the best team in the Big Ten right now. Mm-hmm. Ohio State is still very good, and they get Michigan at their place this year, so you know, that's obviously not going to be easy, and Harbaugh hasn't beaten them yet. Penn State, you know, is, you know, they played Ohio State tough, found a way to lose. Haven't really been, they're not really dominant as you might expect. Still pretty good, Penn State, but, you know, I think they go to Michigan. So that's obviously an advantage for Michigan. But, they're set up well right now to make a run for a playoff, as well as they have been the whole time Harbaugh's been there.
LSU currently ranked fourth. Both them and Alabama hibernate for a week, and then they'll face each other on November 3rd. Alabama would have the natural upper hand, but could Ed Orgeron get them in Death Valley?
Well, yeah, I think they could. We'll have to see. You know, it's nice to have 2 weeks to prepare. Of course, Saban does too. But it gives you a chance to work on, you know, things that they haven't seen. You know, I don't necessarily mean trick plays, but maybe one or two of those too. But, you know, stuff that Alabama won't have film on that you can use to your advantage to try and, you know, beat the team that's, you know, the standard bearer in your league. So, yeah, I think, you know, the way LSU is playing, I think they're definitely the second best team in the SEC. They get them at home, and yeah, they've got a shot.
Jerry Palm joining us, CBS Sports. Who's your Heisman Trophy winner? Is it Tua Tagovailoa right now, or is it anybody else who can give an argument because they don't play for Alabama?
I don't know that there's anybody is that outstanding. You know, Tua is kind of the default because he's Alabama's quarterback. He's having a good year, you know, statistically very good year. But for me, you know, they haven't really played anybody that challenges him yet. I mean, he hardly plays in the fourth quarter of games because they're so far ahead. So, to me, if he's going to win the Heisman Trophy, he has to win it against LSU, Auburn on the road, Georgia maybe in an SEC championship game. Those are the games where he can do the things that earn a Heisman Trophy. And those games haven't happened yet.
You know, I look at the Pac-12, and they're taking a bunch of hits right now because Oregon got beat over against Washington State. And the whole thing that can come through my mind is I'm thinking, I don't see this as an Oregon problem. I see this as maybe the rest of the Pac-10's problem, because if you're going to hinge everything on a guy who's just taken over that program after the guy left who had just taken over that program before, I don't really think you have a strong leg to stand on when you're going through so many changes. And they are playing well, but they did have a hiccup out of Washington State.
Yeah, it's and you know, Washington State's a good team. So they were an underdog in that game.
Yeah.
So you can't even really call that an upset. It's there just isn't an outstanding team in that league. There's some very good teams. Oregon, Washington State, I'd say Stanford, Washington to me is still the best team in that league. Utah is having a good year. You know, so those are all very, I don't know that any of them are top 10 teams. But they're all probably top 25 quality teams, even if they're not all in the poll at the moment. That's just a league that hasn't got a playoff caliber team, so they're not going to be in one. You know, they're not going to have a playoff team this year again. But it doesn't necessarily mean this league will be down forever. They're just in a down cycle right now.
I want to ask you an extremely broad question, because why not? Who's doing the best coaching job so far in the nation?
The best coaching job. I'm going to go with Tom Herman. He's got Texas relevant. He's got them poised to make a run at a playoff spot and a Big 12 championship. And early on, I would say him and Ed Orgeron, LSU.
Who's been the biggest disappointment?
Michigan State. I was a top 15 team in the preseason, and Auburn, I would say to some degree too, but Michigan State just cannot get anything going offensively. Now they've lost their top receiver, and they get red hot Purdue in there this week going up there. So, things can get worse before they get better at Michigan State.
So, I mean, was the win against Penn State just an aberration?
I think that, it was catching them on a good day. It was a good day for Michigan State and a not-so-great day for Penn State. And it's one of those things where you got the right team at the right time. But I think Penn State kind of played into their hands. Michigan State can win these low-scoring games because they're relying heavily on their defense, and their offense had a reasonably good day. But they haven't had a lot of reasonably good days this year.
Jerry, we thank you very much for the time. All the very best, my friend.
All right, thanks.
Jerry Palm, CBS Sports, joining us on the hotline. I got so much of that yesterday about Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's overrated. Urban Meyer's bad. Urban Meyer's a terrible coach. Well, he lost a big game. Then he lost an ugly game on the road against Purdue, a team that started off with an offer to start out the year and out of conference play. Yeah, that's an ugly loss. And he's had a couple of ugly losses. And I don't know what his future is going to be at Ohio State. There's so many rumors about, him and Gene Smith, they're not seeing each other the right way. I know this is I'm right about what I've said about him in the NFL. I don't think that he's good for the NFL. And you saw that last night. There's a total freakout mode that his teams have when things don't go their way. They've lost some close games. They've had a couple of ones that have got away from them. But, man, when they seem to lose games, they lose them. Just it goes to hell. And some of the decision-making, some of the play calling, when you do the two offensive coordinator thing, it's the same thing as quarterbacks. When you have two offensive coordinators, you have no offensive coordinators. But I do know this about Urban Meyer, and I know what happened over this last offseason. You can say whatever you want to about this last offseason. If I leave it to football, he's a fabulous coach. But if I compare him to Nick Saban, who seems to have a complete out-and-out mastery of the game, who's going to look good? You don't put Lovie Smith in that conversation. You don't put Jeff Brohm's done a hell of a job at Purdue. You're not putting Jeff Brohm in that conversation. There's only a certain couple of guys who get thrown into that conversation, and those guys can be nothing but disappointments over the course of time. Kirby Smart had the same thing happen to him a couple of weeks ago. Typical. Typical what? He's been there 2 years. Urban Meyer goes there, goes to Ohio State, wins a national championship. Not enough. They've lost like 7 games or 8 games or whatever it's been since he's got there. Not enough. It's at a higher level because you're competing against the greatest coach of all time. The other ones are legends because they died before a lot of us were born. The other ones were legends because we didn't know about all the ins and outs of college football. We didn't know about guys who were paying to play, guys who were getting paid, guys on the take. We heard these stories, and they were behind the scenes, and we didn't really want to hear about them. But we made these guys out to be legends when really there was just less media covering them. There was just less of a 24-hour news cycle around them where, I hate to say it, we probably would have had the same kind of conversations about Bear Bryant, Woody Hayes, and so on and so forth. We would have had those kind of conversations. Today is an all-day succubus of information that's taken towards these college coaches. And there's one guy who deals with them, and he certainly has his criticisms, but there's one guy who deals with them better than anybody else. He's cantankerous. He's outright mean-spirited at times towards the media. He is outright mean-spirited sometimes to his own fan base. And he wins enough where everybody's going to put up with it because he plays college football in real life the way you would play NCAA on PlayStation 4 if there still was an NCAA football game. He plays real college football, has his guys play real college football the same way you play Madden. He's turned it into a video game. If it was any other sport, Nick Saban would have made it boring. Gino Auriemma, complete dominance of college basketball. Call it women's college basketball. Women's college basketball is boring. Gino Auriemma's killed it. People call in all day long. If they're not Warriors fans or fans of certain players, they're bored by the NBA. Even though the ratings are up 20%, that I can't understand. Everybody wants to say it's boring, but they still seem to be watching it. The Warriors are killing the NBA. They've made it boring. The Patriots before killed the NFL. Even though people are watching like crazy, they made it boring. You'd be arguing that Nick Saban has made it boring, but we watch for the rivalries, we watch for the tradition, we watch because it's Saturday, we watch because of the fun. There's nothing built in like it is with college football. Nick Saban takes it, changes it, makes it more professionalized, and goes out there and kills the competition nearly every single year. And those who beat him become legends. You know you're a legend when you're so good you make legends out of other ones who beat you. Urban Meyer, Dabo Sweeney, anybody else. If Kirby Smart would have been able to get him, Kirby Smart wouldn't have been up there with the legends. If Ed Orgeron gets him in a couple of weeks, Ed Orgeron changes the entire conception of how his entire career has been seen by himself, by anywhere else he's been, by people down at Ole Miss, and certainly fans at LSU who wanted to fire him at the beginning of the season. That's how great Nick Saban's been. And for a guy like Jim Harbaugh, who he might have his shot in college football and in the playoffs, this is a golden opportunity. You want a shot at the champ? You want a shot at the kingdom? Don't mess up over the next month. Penn State coming to town, 2 cupcakes, Ohio State on the road. You get that, you take care of your business in the Big Ten Championship, I'll take it all back. I'll stop calling you the weird shirtless dude who has sleepovers at recruits' houses, I promise you. But it's on you, Jim. Coming up next, we got more coming up with Jeff Goodman. Talk some college basketball with him. It's Ken Carmen on CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.